Good afternoon and welcome to the Supreme Court. Please continue to stand for the invocation by Larry Faulkner, a close family friend of the Breckenridges from Nevada, Missouri.
Please join me in prayer. Most gracious Heavenly Father, we come to you today and with an attitude of appreciation and thankfulness. Thankfulness that you allowed this nation to be founded upon your principles as well as our state. Father, today I want to pray on behalf of Judge Breckenridge. You have blessed her with many talents and given her many gifts. And Father, we ask that your continued blessing upon her. Her gift of intelligence, her gift of courage, and her gift of mercy is one that we are proud of. I would ask your continued blessings in those areas. Father, I ask for you to continue to bless the state of Missouri and the legislators that are involved. For Father, it is extremely important to our country and our state. Father, we ask your blessing upon this court, and we pray the prayer of Solomon that you give them an extra measure of wisdom. Father, for these things, we are all very grateful. Amen.
Thank you, Mr. Faulkner. Please be seated. I'm Chief Justice Laura Denver Stitt. On behalf of the Supreme Court of Missouri, I welcome you to the building. Let me introduce my colleagues on the court. To my far right are Judge Michael Wolf, Judge Stephen N. Limbaugh, Jr., and Judge William Ray Price, Jr. To my far left are Judge Mary Rose Russell and Judge Rick Titleman. Also joining us today are some former members of the Supreme Court, and I ask all of you former members who are here to now stand as a group, and in the interest of time, I ask you in the audience to please hold your applause until they've all risen and been introduced. Former Judge Ann Covington, Jack Barget, Andrew Jackson Higgins, and Edward Chip Robertson. I was pointed out one person has double billing, and I was going to give him his latest billing, but Dwayne Bitton, also formerly of this court, will also be announced this week. And we also have Susie Donnelly, the widow of former Supreme Court Judge Robert Donnelly, here today. It's my honor to preside over Judge Breckenridge's investiture ceremony on this very special day. I take particular pleasure in welcoming Judge Breckenridge to the court because I've already had the privilege of serving with her for 6 years as a judge of the Missouri Court of Appeals Western District before I joined this court in 2001. Our roles are reversed today, for she had been on the Western District before I joined that bench in 1994. I hope there were many reasons why she thought I would be a good addition to the Western District, but I recall one in particular. She was only the second woman ever to serve on the Western District. The first had been Ann Covington, who left to join this court. Patty was the only woman on that court for nearly the next 5 years, and so her colleagues often would turn to her and ask, "So, Patty, how would women feel about that?" She said it was therefore a relief when I got there because, of course, they soon found out that Patty and I did not agree on all matters of policy or case analysis any more than the rest of them did. Finally, she said, the pressure was off. She no longer had to represent the views of half the world. Well, Patty, with your addition to the court, 3 of our 7 judges are women, and that certainly represents a milestone for us all. Although I would hasten to point out that 10 other states also have the same proportion of women on their highest courts, and a few have even more. Your appointment calls to mind an event I mentioned at my own investiture ceremony. About a year prior to my appointment to the court, my youngest daughter, Cynthia, then age 8, came up to me and said, "Mommy, you're a lawyer and a judge, aren't you?" When I said yes, she said, "Can only girl lawyers be judges, or can boy lawyers be judges, too?" I assured her that we do not discriminate in Missouri and that boy lawyers can be judges, too, if they work hard and are qualified. While Cynthia's question showed how far women had come, wouldn't we as a society have come even further when we reached a point where no one even thought to ask whether a person of a particular gender could fill a particular role, where we would speak only of a person's accomplishments and qualifications, not the person's gender? I believe that after today, we're closer to that goal. With all the discussion and debate, controversy and interest over who would be nominated for Judge White's vacancy and who the governor would select, I heard many people discuss whether the new judge would be rural or urban, liberal or conservative, Republican or Democrat, a sitting judge or a practicing attorney, younger or older, many other factors. When the governor selected Judge Breckinridge, I heard many people talk about her excellence as a jurist, long experience on the bench, attention to detail, and ability to put aside personal views and rule based on the law and the facts before her. But I don't think anyone suggested to me that her gender did play or should have played any role in her selection. And that's great. For what I want, what I think all of us in this court and what all judges want, is to be judged based on our legal abilities. And Judge Breckinridge has great legal ability. The court already has had a chance to learn that firsthand. For, as those of you who are at the bar meeting in Springfield know, we had her join us in hearing cases just a few short weeks after she was selected. She already has shown great insight and analytic ability and has not been hesitant about sharing her views or addressing where they differ from those of the other judges on the court. And that's as it should be, for it is from our diverse backgrounds and viewpoints that we gain our greatest strength, that we learn from each other. And so I welcome you, Patty, and look forward to serving with you here for many years to come. Before I introduce the first speaker today, I would like to introduce a few more honored guests. First, I know you'll hear more about him later, but Judge Breckinridge's husband, Brian Breckinridge, is here with us today. Brian. Also present are many of the current and former judges of the Western District of the Court of Appeals, where Judge Breckinridge has served since her appointment in 1990, some 17 years ago. I ask all of you to stand and remain standing as I call out all your names, and I ask those in the courtroom to please again hold your applause until I've named all of them. We have Chief Judge Vic Howard, Judges Joe Ellis, Lisa White Hardwick, Ron Holliger, and Tom Newton, and retired judges Don Kennedy, Albert Reeder, and Eddie Smith. Judge Breckinridge is also honored to have many of the current or former members of the Eastern and Southern Districts of the Court of Appeals here today. Again, please stand as I call your name. Judges Clifford Ahrens, Nanette Baker, Kathy Ann Crane, Bob Dowd, Mary Kay Hoff, Sherry Sullivan, and retired judges Jim Dowd and Jim Reinhardt. And from the Southern District, we have Chief Judge Gary Lynch and Judges Jeff Bates, John Parrish, Nancy Rahmeyer, and Dan Scott. We are also honored to have a number of our federal judicial colleagues here with us today, 8th Circuit Judge Dwayne Benton, Western District Judge Gary Finner, Eastern District of Missouri Judge Dick Weber, Senior Western District Judge Dean Whipple, and Federal Magistrate Sarah Hayes. In this room and in Division II, we have a number of trial judges, and of course, Judge Breckinridge was an Associate Circuit Judge for many years and served with many of these judges. They include Jody Azel, Jim Bickle, Don Burrell, Richard Callahan, Charles Curlis, Joe Dandurand, Debbie Daniels, Kelvin Holden, Pat Joyce, Peggy McGraw, Sandra Midkiff, Kelly Morehouse, Neil Quitno, Peggy Richardson, Margaret Sauer, Jim Sullivan, Lisa Van Amberg, Stephen Wilcox, Gary Witt, and retired or senior judges Susan Block, Tom Brown, James Cooksey, Jerry Macbeth, Joyce Otten, and Miles Sweeney. With all those judges here, we should have a quick CLE program or something. We're also honored to have many of our statewide elected officials here today, including Auditor Susan Monti, and I know a number of representatives were hoping to come, including Barney Fisher, Mark Burns, Tim Fluke, and Rodney Shad. Governor Blunt's office is also represented here today by two senior members of that office, General Counsel Henry Herschel and the Director of Boards and Commissions, Tom Reese. Thank you both for coming. Finally, we're honored to have numerous other dignitaries with us today. I know I can't name them all, but there's a few who I've seen who I'll briefly mention. The immediate past president of the Missouri Bar, Ron Baird. Again, hold your applause till the end. The first woman president of the Missouri Bar, Doreen Dodson. MoBar Executive Director, Keith Burks. University of Missouri Law School Dean, Larry Desem, and Deputy Chancellor, Michael Middleton. Appellate Judicial Commissioner Nancy Mogeb, who was on the commission that selected Judge Breckenridge and two other wonderful finalists for this position. PSC Commissioner Rod Chappell, Supreme Court Clerk Tom Simon, and Western District Clerk Terry Lord. Gary Waint, our Interim State Court Administrator, the Chief Disciplinary Counsel Alan Pretzel, Board of Law Examiners President Tom Weaver, and Robert Connor, retired clerk of the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Missouri. To them and all the other dignitaries, which are all of you there, I thank you for coming. We will now hear from four different speakers who represent four different facets of Judge Breckenridge's life. The first speaker is the Honorable James R. Bickle. Judge Bickle is a former law partner of Judge Breckenridge and her husband, Brian Breckenridge. He's currently the presiding judge of the 28th Circuit, which includes Nevada, and will speak to us principally about her life in Nevada. Judge Bickle.
May it please the Court. Many of you know or are quickly learning what I've known about Patty Breckenridge since she became the fourth B in the firm that was then known as Russell, Brown, Bickle, Breckenridge, and Breckenridge. Quite a mouthful for our receptionist. But she's an intelligent, hardworking, fair, and caring person. She joined her husband, Brian, her father, Don Russell, Keith Brown, and I, and went right to work. Our firm was, everyone was busy. We had time to answer some questions, which you kind of learned on the fly when you were practicing in Nevada. Patty's intelligence and her hard work served her well in that regard. She quickly learned the practical aspects of being a lawyer, kind of the nuts and bolts of practicing law that you don't always learn at the books and the study in law school. Then all too soon for the four of us, she was appointed Associate Circuit Judge of Vernon County. And that's when her fairness and caring began to become so evident. She followed the law even-handedly. Every attorney practicing before her knew that they'd get a fair shake. And that is really illustrated by the few times that Patty was ever disqualified by a change of judge. Mm-hmm. Every lawyer knew she'd rule on the evidence and the law without favoritism. She'd do that even when the outcome might not have been what she thought was the best result. And I illustrate that by remembering a comment she made to me when she had ruled against one of my clients who wanted to take a child out of state. She said, "I don't know that I necessarily agree with this outcome, but this is what the statute says I have to do." She didn't say that because she was ruling against a former partner. She said that because she understood what that order was going to mean to the litigant. Patty cares about people. It matters to her how her judgments are going to play out in the lives of the people that came to court before her. It was always more than a job for Patty. Her appointment to the Supreme Court affirms that she's an intelligent, hardworking, fair, and caring person. And since I'm to talk about her Nevada years, let me briefly recite a partial list of Patty's accomplishments there. She was elected by her peers as the president of the Missouri Association of Probate and Associate Circuit Judges. The Nevada Rotary Club named her the prestigious Citizen of the Year in 1989. A co-honor agree with Brian. It was the first time that a husband and wife team had ever been so honored in the same year. She was named Seroptimus Woman of Distinction and was also a winner of their Women Helping Women Award. She was Nevada's Business and Professional Women's Woman of the Year in 1985. She served as president of both of those women's organizations. Patty was active in the United Methodist Church in Nevada, where she served as president of the Administrative Council. But perhaps most long-lasting, she was a charter founder in establishing the Vernon County Council on Families in Crisis, which developed a shelter for battered women in Nevada. But everyone, Judge Stiff, before me and after me, are going to be saying these nice and serious and flowery things about Patty. So I wanted to say something maybe a little more lighthearted. Think back of something from her past that might embarrass her just a little bit. So I went to the Vernon County Archivist. All right, those of you who know, that's the custodian at the courthouse who has a key to the attic where all the old records are stored. And she said, "What are you looking for up there?" I said, "Oh, just some little kind of a not too flattering tidbit about Patty Breckinridge." And she looked at me and she said, "You too?" And you may know what's coming because it sounded strange to me. I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "Well, there's some guy named Adam Smith up there. He's been there for 8 weeks. He's trying to come up with the same thing, and he hadn't found anything." But I did find one. There is a mistake in Patty's biography. It says she was first appointed to the bench by Governor Kit Bond. That simply is not the case. I first appointed Patty Breckinridge to the bench. I named her the first alternate to the substitute municipal judge for the city of Nevada, Missouri. I guess I knew what I was doing back then, because she sure has shown all of us from Nevada how right we were in honoring her the way we did. It's our congratulations to the newest member of the Missouri Supreme Court, Judge Patricia Breckinridge. We love you and are very proud of you.
The second speaker today is Denise Henning. Ms. Henning is a former law clerk to Judge Breckinridge, a former Lon Hocker Award winner, former president of the Association of Women Lawyers of Greater Kansas City, and now the principal in the Henning Law Firm in Kansas City. She's also a close friend of Judge Breckinridge and will speak to us from that perspective. Denise?
I met Patty Breckinridge 15 years ago when I went to the Court of Appeals to interview for a clerking job. I was in my last year of law school at the University of Illinois, and I had a job offer from the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court in Nebraska. But I didn't want to go back there, because that's where I'm from. So I interviewed with Patty. I am a miserable failure at interviewing, and Patty will readily agree with that. Despite that, she hired me because she later told me that I appeared to be normal, and apparently I faked that normal part to get the job. The job paid $10,000 less than the job in Nebraska, but I took it anyway, despite the fact that my husband and my mother thought I was absolutely nuts to take a job that was $10,000 less than what I'd already been offered. Little did I know when I went to work for Patty Breckinridge in 1992 that I would gain a wonderful friend, a dedicated mentor, and a priceless relationship. The qualities that make Patty such a wonderful person and such a wonderful friend are the same qualities that make her so uniquely qualified for the Supreme Court. Patty puts people first. Patty is an incredibly loyal, supportive, and dedicated friend, whose thoughtfulness and concern know no boundaries. I have been the fortunate recipient of that thoughtfulness on so many occasions. When I had breast cancer in 2004, she dropped everything. She went to Mayo Clinic with me. She called me every day. She insisted that we were getting a second opinion. We were going to get the best care that there was. And I have watched her support others in that same way, such as her friend Nancy. And Nancy would be so proud of you today, Patty. If you need her, Patty is there. She provides support for others in so many ways. whether it means opening up her home to a friend who doesn't have electricity during an ice storm, or taking a trip to the veterinarian to say goodbye to a beloved pet with a friend who could not make that journey on her own. Oprah Winfrey once said, "Lots of people want to ride with you in the limo, but what you want is someone who will take the bus with you when the limo breaks down." Patty has taken the bus with so many of us, time and time and time again. Nowhere is Patty's compassion more evident than in the way she loves and protects those who cannot protect themselves. Whether it is a person down in their luck, an abused child, or a stray cat or dog, Patty will go to every length to help them. Even if it means rescuing a bird from the middle of the road or buying a pound of bologna to lure a stray dog away from busy traffic, or making sure that the heat is turned back on in someone's cold apartment. Patty is the only person I know who could take a stray cat she calls Newt and love him despite the fact that he really needs to be on a 24-hour IV drip of Prozac. Patty is the same genuine, caring, down-to-earth person regardless of who she is talking to or what she's doing. She is able to meet, relate, and touch people from all walks of life, and that is truly a gift, and one that has served her well in her role as a judge. And besides all that, Patty knows how to have fun. She knows how to have a good time, whether it's tailgating at a Chiefs game, or scuba diving, or competing at the American Royal Barbecue, or celebrating birthdays. We have a tradition where each summer we take our boat to Nevada and spend a weekend with Patty and Brian and the Whipples. And Tim tries to kill Brian on the tube, and Patty lost her swimsuit bottoms almost one time doing that. Yes. There are so many good memories in those weekends. When I was preparing for this, I asked others who knew her well for some thoughts about Patty, and I was amazed at how many times the word integrity came up. Patty is a woman of integrity with a deep commitment to doing the right thing. Not because it will make her look good, but because it is the right thing to do. And she is not afraid to make hard decisions, even when they are unpopular. One of those people that I talked to told me, "What I appreciate most about Patty is her ability to handle difficult situations with diplomacy and grace, and her willingness to not only serve as an inspiration to others, but when asked and when appropriate to offer advice on how to resolve difficult issues." Another person said, "Surely there has never been a judge appointed to the Missouri Supreme Court who is a better person, who will care more, and who will be more conscientious about every single thing she does and every decision she makes." Patty, there are so many of us who are proud to know you, proud and honored to call you our friend. What an inspiration you and your colleagues, Judge Stith and Judge Russell, have been to every woman lawyer in this state and across the nation. You have mentored so many over the years, including me. You are a role model like no other.
Our third speaker is the Honorable Victor Howard, Chief Judge of the Missouri Court of Appeals for the Western District. Judge Howard has served with Judge Breckenridge for 11 years on the Western District, and I'm confident he will offer us additional insights into her judicial career and temperament.
It's always nice to be here in this wonderful courtroom, but it's especially nice today because I know what this occasion means to my good friend and former colleague, that's hard to say, Patty and her wonderful husband, Brian. In putting together some remarks for today, I was struck by how difficult it is to find any background information on Patty. If there were only some place you could go, some source you could go to, where information about Patty's life is stored and gathered, Oh, well, that would have been easy. What if you could pick and choose from the best qualities of all of us? All of us in this room and the room next door. And mix all those traits together to make the ideal judge. Integrity, that's been mentioned several times today. Fairness. Intelligence. Common sense. Honesty. And so on. Certainly no one is perfect. But Patty comes darn close to being the ideal judge because those qualities fit her perfectly. You know, human beings are very complex indeed. There are many layers to each person. And the longer you know someone, the more layers are revealed. If you meet someone only once, you only know the top layer. That first impression. The first thing I remember about Patty, I bet some of you will feel the same way, first thing I remember is her smile. And her wonderful personality. And no question about it, she makes a great first impression. But I'm glad I got to know her better, because there's a whole lot more to this lady judge from Nevada, Missouri. Patty is perfectly suited to be an appellate judge. She has this internal drive to do the right thing, an intellectual curiosity that compels her to dissect the arguments of a case like a skilled surgeon. Patty literally works on hundreds of cases each year, and she treats every single one with dignity and respect. Almost every day, this is true, almost every day, Patty, you're smiling. Some of this is going to be true. I leave it to the judge and jury to decide which is which. Almost every day, Patty takes home a case to work on at home. She works long hours at the office. She takes the case home. And sometimes she literally has hundreds of pieces of paper. But she has a philosophy. That case is not just pieces of paper. To somebody, that case is the most important issue in their life. It's the thing, the last thing they think about when they go to bed at night. It's the first thing they think about when they open their eyes in the morning. Rest assured, that case will receive Judge Breckenridge's careful consideration. Patty has given so much to so many. For example, she's donated many, many hours of her life mentoring disadvantaged children, talking to them, reading to them, sharing their ups, sharing their downs. These children look to her, and I've seen this, with adoration, with respect, and appreciation. Patty has made a real impact on their lives, and that legacy will live on. Patty, you reached out to society's forgotten children, and for that, they will never forget you. As you've heard, Patty also has a tender heart for animals. What? Her motto? No stray left behind. Probably saw the bumper sticker when you drove up. No stray should be left hungry. No stray should be left cold. Every pet should get the best care possible. Even her crazy, let's just say challenged, kitty cat. This cat, who's already been mentioned, Newt, is frequently heavily medicated and under the care of a psychologist. But Patty, always loyal, resists every doctor's recommendation that little Newt be sent to, not kitty cat heaven, I'm not going there, an institution. And I didn't even realize they had places like that for cats. But Patty won't do it. She thinks it'll cause a stigma in the family. After all, I said, hey, just say it went away to boarding school. She didn't buy that, so Patty will continue to give Newt the benefit of a sometimes loving home. Her other cat, Punky, came to the Breckenridge home. He lives in the Kansas City home, right? Yeah. Because a neighbor was not providing the appropriate level of adult supervision to Punky. Well, Patty had a little talk with that neighbor. And Patty arranged what she called an adoption. It was more likely an immediate termination of parental rights. Yet more evidence of Patty's commitment to others, man or beast. So how do we evaluate the worth of a judge? We can appraise the value of gold, silver, houses, even baseball cards. But it's much more difficult with judges because it involves so many intangibles. This is a good story. In 1961, the Metropolitan Museum of Art purchased Rembrandt's painting of Aristotle, beholding the head of Homer, for $5 million. At that time, the price was so extraordinary that it made the cover of Time magazine. What makes that painting so valuable? Probably consists of $25 worth of canvas and oil. Well, it's because Rembrandt's gone. And there will never be another person who can lay color and texture on a canvas quite the way that he did. And there will never be another person who can capture light coming from a background quite like he could. He was unique. He had value. And there will never be another person who will bring to this court quite the same qualities, the same experiences, like Patty will. She is unique. She has value. We, the people of the great state of Missouri, are fortunate to have you, Patty Breckenridge.
Would it be appropriate at this point to take judicial notice of the accuracy of all Judge Howard's comments about her pet? Our final speaker is former Supreme Court Judge Ann Covington. Judge Covington will be remembered not only for being the first woman on the Supreme Court and the first woman Chief Justice, but also for the quiet dignity with which she carried out her groundbreaking role. She has been a wonderful role model for me and for Judge Russell, and has been a longtime friend and mentor to Judge Breckenridge as well. Since leaving the bench, Judge Covington joined Brian Cave, and as I understand it, she tried to retire from there not long ago, but they were as reluctant for her to leave Brian Cave as we were all reluctant for her to leave the court here, and she's now practicing with the firm from their Jefferson City office. Please welcome Judge Covington.
The year is 2007. Justice Ronnie White announces that he will step down from this bench. In an office at 1300 Oak Street in Kansas City, that's the Missouri Court of Appeals, Western District, a judge wonders about whether she might consider applying for the vacancy. As an aside, I might ask, but won't, for those of you who hang around with Judge Breckenridge and have ever heard her say, just raise your hand. Well, for her, there is much to consider. The judge has been a judge, it seems, really since she was a mere child. Having commenced her judicial career and thus her judicial education very soon after having graduated from law school. By now, the summer of 2007, she has been at the Court of Appeals for quite a while. There is, we all know, a certain level of comfort in staying where one is. But Judge Breckenridge has never been afraid of change. And what's more, here in this red brick building, the Missouri Supreme Court, there is a different kind of intellectual challenge. In addition to considering the disruption of change and the challenges that are attendant to that, there is the process itself to consider. Having years ago endured the rigorous exercise of making application to the Missouri Court of Appeals Western District, Judge Breckenridge really recalls the investment. Does she really want to undertake the mental and emotional task of compiling what by now is an extraordinary resume, of which you've heard, and all those hundreds and hundreds of opinions. Does she really want to call upon her friends and even, yes, some others to assist her again? It certainly isn't any fun. It is work. It is emotionally consuming. Besides, she's happy where she is. But it has come time to decide. Yes, she'll do it. At least she thinks she comprehends the process. What process? What process? The Missouri plan and its process. The Missouri plan, now a model for much of the nation, was devised in the early 1940s to remove politics as much as possible from judicial selection, because the times of Tom Pendergast and others had allowed atrocities to emerge from the then attitude, we'll have our own people on the bench. A pharmacist who never practiced law became a circuit judge because he was a friend of the political cabal. A pedophile sat on the bench. Extreme examples, yes, perhaps, but no more extreme than the Billings-Douglas race for this court that finally outraged Missouri's citizens sufficiently to act. So they, our forefathers and foremothers, in the 1940s, adopted a plan to focus on merit. Perfect plan? Of course not. Since the 1940s, I dare say there could not have been even one judge sitting on this or any other appellate court of the state of Missouri whom every person observing would have said at the time of selection, perfect choice. There's always something wrong with every choice. I'll share a few complaints. He's not order of the coif. Who ever even heard of her? He has a big ego. She is not collegial. Too smart for his own good. Limited experience in jury trials. Not enough appellate practice. Too much practice on the plaintiff's side. Too much practice on the corporate side. He's slow in getting out his opinions. Her opinions are too thin. Ah, the Missouri plan, not perfect. But still, the pendulum swings, and the thing works. So the time is now late summer. In some circles, a public discourse about a so-called perfect choice has taken hold. But a perfect plan for identifying the perfect judge was really not the intent of the framers of the Missouri plan. To have a competent judge of fine character, one who possesses what I shorthandedly call the Boy Scout and Girl Scout qualities of the legal profession. That's the intent. These qualities help to ensure that the judge will be fair and impartial and conduct herself with dignity, bottomed in integrity. She will think for herself and not for her patrons. So what happened? Well, here in the front row sits an example of the Missouri plan. She is a worker. Others have talked about that. Look at her opinions. I myself, having returned to the practice, might not always like them. Nope, not my perfect choice, so to speak. But I know that Patty Breckenridge worked at it. Her opinions are marked by lucidity and obvious attention. And that's all we can ask. We all respect that. Does Patty Breckenridge know and understand the law, or does she seek to answer the questions she has when she does not know? Yes. Will Patty Breckenridge be kind and do good? Yes. Does she have the backbone to disagree? Yes. Does she have the strength to write a dissent? Yes. Yet, at the same time, she is one of the most pleasant people with whom any of us may have ever disagreed. Does Patricia Breckenridge respect precedent, but with an understanding that it should always be freshly examined, not blindly applied? Yes. Is she dedicated to the rule of law? Yes. Will she understand that when the legislature speaks, it is not within the province of this court to interfere unless the enactment is clearly unconstitutional? Yes, indeed. Finally, will she, Patricia Breckenridge, be a judicial activist? Well, if that means making a decision from time to time that is unpopular with a majority, or with the plaintiff's bar, or with the defense bar, or with the prosecution, or the criminal defense bar, with elected officials, with whomever, when the law requires it, will she have the courage? Yes. I can't read Patty Breckenridge's mind, but I think, having known her, that here's what she would say about what a good appellate judge would say. If I am a good judge, it is because I do not know the answers, but I seek them in the company of my colleagues. True, we do not always agree, but I know that I ask better questions and reach more solid decisions. That is what I try to do, she would say, but not always with complete success. That's a good appellate judge. A good judge, that is what is Patricia Breckenridge. She is one who will write the law and can write the law, and who, to paraphrase the author Edith Wharton, who used these words in another context, is unafraid of change, insatiable in intellectual curiosity, interested in big things, and happy in small ways. So, to Governor Blunt and the Commission, thank you. The plan worked again. And Honorable Court, I commend Judge Breckenridge to you with confidence that she will be an honorable and a beloved colleague. Thank you.
It's now time for Judge Breckenridge to take the oath of office. The oath will be administered by the Honorable Don W. Kennedy, former Chief Judge of the Missouri Court of Appeals, Western District. I only had the opportunity to serve with Don Kennedy for about 1 year before he retired from the bench, but I learned more from him in that 1 year than I had learned from any mentor since I clerked on this court for Judge Robert Seiler. He was a wonderful colleague and advisor to me and to so many others over the years, including Judge Breckenridge. Judge Kennedy. I believe Judge Kennedy may have a few words to share before he gives the oath.
Pull that out there, will you, please? I'm going to stand to my feet, Madam Chief Justice. Thank you. Yeah. I was a little dubious about this, but it'll work all right. When have you ever been to a happier assembly than this one? What wonderful speeches we've heard. And isn't it fun to hear somebody bragged on that you love? That's what we've enjoyed today. I want to say a few words about the history of Patty's and my oaths. Thirty years ago, I was circuit judge at Nevada, and one autumn day, a fresh-faced young woman stood before the bench with a crisp new law license, and she wanted to take the oath of admission to the bar. And I administered to Patty Breckenridge the oath of admission to the bar, and she was admitted on that very day. Oath number one. What reason did I have to suspect that there was standing before me a future judge of the Supreme Court of Missouri? No, by the time she reached the age I was then, here she is, a judge of the Supreme Court of Missouri. That was oath number one. It was a little Patty Russell, married by that time. Patty Russell, the favorite kid of Nevada, and married by that time to Brian Breckenridge, another favorite kid of Missouri, of Nevada. And I had known Patty since her birth. At the time of her birth, her mother and dad, Don and Barbara, lived two blocks west of where we live, on West Cherry Street. Two Dons. And the public got very confused about that. But Patty and my daughter, Jennifer, were born at about the same time in 1953, and went through school together, and Patty was in and out of our house from time to time, so I knew her well, this young woman. Well, and from the Olympian heights of the circuit bench there in Nevada, I administered the oath of office to her. A dozen years passed, and I, in the meantime, have been appointed to the Court of Appeals in Kansas City, and had moved from Nevada up to Kansas City. And one day, Governor Ashcroft appointed Patty to the Court of Appeals. I won't tell you the whole story about how, and by the way, it's the chief judge's privilege, you know, to administer the oath to these new judges. And I won't tell you how it was. I was no longer chief judge. I had been chief judge, and Judge Nugent had succeeded me. And I won't tell you about the maneuvering that went on. Because Judge Nugent is no longer with us, and could, you know the rule. He's not here to deny what I say while my mouth is closed, too. But anyway, I administered the oath of office to Patty and served as her colleague for 5 years until my own retirement in 1995. Well, let's see. I can say amen to all the nice things these lawyers and judges have said about Patty. had them thoroughly furnished with common law precepts and cases, but with a heart where justice rules, and they work together very nicely. And that brings us to today. Oath number 3. 17 years. Let's see. 17 years since your appointment to the Court of Appeals, which was 1990. Yes, that's right. And here you are, in the highest court in the land, Little Patty Russell. When I read in the newspaper that Patty had been appointed, I said to my wife, who sits right over there in that chair, and Audrey, I said, I would love to administer the oath of office to her. And about that time, the phone rang, and it was Patty. And she said, would you administer the oath of office to me? And I was delighted and thrilled and honored. And you do me a very great and treasured honor today, Patty, to allow me to administer the oath to you. And I thank you, Madam Chief Justice, for permitting me to do this.
My privilege.
Because I know it's your privilege to do it. And so I think, Patty, I'll have you stand right now. And I'm about to make you a member of this splendid group of judges of the Supreme Court of Missouri, and you'll bring honor to the court as the court honors you. Raise your right hand, please. I, Patricia Breckenridge, do solemnly swear.
I, Patricia Breckenridge, do solemnly swear
that I will support the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of Missouri.
And the Constitution of Missouri.
And that I will faithfully demean myself.
And that I will faithfully demean myself.
In the office of the Judge of the Supreme Court.
In the office of Judge of the Supreme Court.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Very well, Patty.
Thank you so much, and it is my honor to have you swear me in. I appreciate it. Chief Justice Stitt, fellow members of the court, other officials, family, and friends, I do not have adequate words to express the gratitude I feel for being given the honor of serving as a judge of the Missouri Supreme Court. I have been given this incredible opportunity thanks to the support and assistance of countless friends and colleagues. And I thank you all for coming here today to help me celebrate this special event in my life. And with me today is my family, who I would like to introduce. First, my husband of more than 30 years, who I love more than I can say. Brian, would you stand and be recognized? Thank you for your love and support always, but particularly during the last few months. The rest of my family has also been incredibly supportive. My mother, Barbara Reed, from Springfield. Mom, if you'll stand and if you'll hold the applause till all of my family has been introduced. My father, Don Russell, from Nevada.
My sister and her husband, Doug and Susan Brashears from Eureka Springs, Arkansas. My brother, John, is in Georgia competing in a bass fishing tournament, which is his passion. While I miss having him here, I applaud his accomplishment of qualifying, and I hope he catches the big ones. So. My brother-in-law and his wife, Bob and Donna Breckenridge from St. Louis, and Donna's daughter, Carly. You can't hardly see Carly, but she's here. My aunt and uncle from Bolivar, Wallace and Lietta Russell. My aunt and uncle from Topeka, Kansas, Jim and Judy Wood. I owe a special thanks to Uncle Jim because months ago he suggested I should apply for the Supreme Court when Ronnie White had not even announced his retirement. Brian's cousin and his wife, Bob and Donna Pohl from Osage Beach. And one last very special friend who's back in the back corner, Denise Slaughter, and I told her I was going to make her stand. Denise and I have worked together since Denise was 7 and she's now 16, and she is as much family as my family here. So I appreciate her being here. So thanks to all of my family. I am so appreciative to have been nominated by the Appellate Judicial Commission, whose members are its chair, Chief Justice Stitt, Bill Birch, Steve Garner, Rich McLeod, Nancy Mogab, Don Ross, and Jill Schurin. They spent countless hours this summer, all under rare scrutiny, conscientiously performing the task of selecting 3 individuals for the panel. And they are to be commended for their volunteer service to the state of Missouri and its judicial system. Personally, I thank the members of the commission for their support by naming me as a member of the panel. In addition to Chief Justice Stitt, Nancy Mogab is here today. If you'd stand, please. When the panel was announced, Ron Holliger and I had served on the Western District for years and were very good friends as well as colleagues. But I was only acquainted with Nanette Baker from judicial gatherings. Because of the intense scrutiny given to the panel by the public and the media, the process was a bit stressful. And I greatly appreciate the friendship that we developed as we shared the experience and supported each other. I have the utmost respect and admiration and affection for Ron and Nanette, and it was a privilege to be on the panel with them. While the process was intense and rigorous, it was still a positive experience because so many people were kind and supportive. Both courtrooms here today are filled with those persons. While I wish I could name and thank you all individually, there are too many of you to name and your kindness is too numerous. So I thank you all. Many gave advice and wise counsel just when I needed it. Others helped me acquire the information I needed for the process, especially the 111 questions that left me racking my brain and revisiting times in my life that I had not thought about for years. Some friends shared memories of past experiences. Others helped by simply listening and spending time with me. I thank you all. While I can't thank everyone individually, I do need to thank my staff at the Western District, my judicial administrative assistant, Kathy Willis, and my law clerks, Michael Moss, Jill Kingsbury, and Susan King. You are absolutely the best, and I am very fortunate. I am very fortunate to have worked with you. I especially thank Michael for his willingness to continue as my law clerk at the Supreme Court. And I thank all of my friends at the Western District, both judges and staff. After 17 years, you're as much family as friends, and I will miss working with you. Above all, I express my gratitude to Governor Matt Blunt for appointing me. Governor Blunt and his staff, two of whom are here today, Henry Herschel and Tom Reese, were courteous in all my contacts with them. I appreciate the way the governor conscientiously balanced his comprehensive inquiry into the character and experience of all three candidates before making his decision. And he did so while respecting our privacy and security. He spent 2 hours interviewing each of us, asking thoughtful, tough questions, and I appreciate the interest he showed in knowing us when he made his decision. I understand he was impressed by the experience and qualifications of all three candidates. But in the end, he appointed me, and I thank him for his faith in me. When I graduated from the University of Missouri School of Law, I had no thought of being a judge. I intended to return to the law firm in Nevada and practice law for my entire career with my father and my husband, Keith Brown, and Jim Bickle. Even when our local associate circuit judge, Bill Sterrett, reached mandatory retirement age, it didn't occur to me to seek the appointment. But my husband, Brian, encouraged me to apply. He thought that my nature was well suited for being a judge. As it turns out, Brian had greater insight into my nature than I, and his suggestion caused me to find my passion. When then-Governor Kit Bond appointed me as the Associate Circuit Judge, I was 28 years old. It was soon after the reorganization of the Missouri judicial system, which replaced magistrate judges with Associate Circuit Judges, and a number of young attorneys either ran for or were appointed as Associate Circuit Judges, one being my former colleague, Eddie Smith. As with most 20-somethings, I had no idea how little I knew and how much there was to learn. Fortunately, I had outstanding judges in the 28th Circuit, after whom I modeled myself, and all of them graciously gave me their aid and advice. In particular, Judge Henry Lyle from Barton County told me something that I will never forget. He told me that no matter how hard I worked, there would be times I would be called upon to make rulings that I would not know the law. He advised that when that occurred, I should search out the answers, and in the end, I should do what I believed was right. He told me that 95% of the time I would be right. And in the small percentage of the time that I was mistaken, I could be comforted by the fact that I had done what I thought was right. This advice helped me immensely. First, I was impressed by the fact that Henry, a former FBI agent, state representative, and experienced judge, willingly admitted that he didn't know all the law. He taught me the important lesson that it's a strong judge who admits to not knowing everything and who asks to be educated by attorneys or seeks the knowledge of other judges. He taught me that while one should do one's best to learn the law, it's impossible to know it all, especially when the facts of the case don't fit into any declaration of existing law. Under that circumstance, he taught me to rely on my best judgment to find the right way under the law to resolve each case. This was years before I'd heard the term activist judge. But even without that label, I knew Henry was certainly not encouraging me to decide cases according to my personal whim or desire. I went to law school because I wanted to help people, and I hope I have. But as a judge, I can't help everyone. I certainly can't make everyone happy, for there is almost always someone who loses in a contested case. Although I've always tried to do the right thing, there were any number of times that people were upset with the ruling I made, often because they didn't understand the legal nuances of the ruling. I learned from my mentors, however, that the decisions a judge makes are not always popular, and therefore a judge cannot let his or her personal feelings or those of the parties or the public sway the decision. My mentors taught me that, no matter what, I had to do the right thing and take satisfaction from knowing I had done so, no matter how the parties or the public reacted. I recognize the great responsibility that comes with being a judge. As I served as an associate circuit judge, I was struck by the people who brought their disputes to me to resolve. No matter how simple the legal issues were, it was clear by looking into their eyes that this case was the most important thing in the world to them, and it really made me cherish my job. As a result, I agonized about doing the right thing by the law and the facts of each case whenever I decided a case. When I began serving 9 years later on the Court of Appeals, I learned that I love the law itself as well. But I have never forgotten that ultimately every decision I make impacts people, those in the case and those that will be affected by the decision in years to come. When then-Governor Ashcroft appointed me to the Western District, he asked two things of me. The first was that I be present at the court in Kansas City on a full-time basis, which is why Brian and I have maintained two homes for all these years. The second thing he asked was, as a judge, that I do the right thing. And when he said that, I was struck by the similarity to what Judge Henry Lyle had told me years before. I now recognize, after 25 years on the bench, that there can be a difference of opinion as to what is the right thing. The many cases that come before the courts, especially this court, do not have clear answers. And if the facts and law of all cases were clear, then there would be no need for lawyers or judges. From my years as a judge, working with the best there are in Missouri, particularly those on the Western District, I have come to believe that the right thing for a judge is to be a person of integrity, to show respect for Missouri's judicial system by treating all those who use it with respect, to be fair and impartial, putting aside one's personal opinions and views to reach the decision in each case by applying the laws to the facts of the case, and to have the courage to make the right decision even when unpopular. I have been appointed to fill the vacancy created by Ronnie White's resignation. While I can fill the vacancy, I will not fill the void that Judge White's retirement left. Although he was the first and only African-American judge to serve on the court, he is recognized for serving with distinction without regard to color. He was passionate in his decisions on the court and will be missed by the citizens of Missouri. At my farewell luncheon at the Court of Appeals, I told them when I left Vernon County, I did not ever expect to work with another group of individuals that I respected as much or cared about as much. But I soon learned that I had been blessed with wonderful coworkers at the Western District. I look forward to going to work every day to work with friends and caring colleagues. I am sad to leave. I'm also sad to give up the perfect parking space for the new Sprint Arena. After 2 years of construction. After arriving at the Supreme Court a few weeks ago, I could immediately tell that I am again blessed. My colleagues have graciously welcomed me and assisted me in learning my new job. The staff have been incredibly helpful in organizing my workload and helping me train my new staff member, Lori Knabel. Special thanks to Judicial Executive Assistants Felina Vittito-Moore, Diana Letterman, Norma Newell, Sandra Mears, Kathy Blanton. You have been wonderful. I call them the JEA angels. The Supreme Court staff as a whole have been incredible. To a person, they have gone out of their way to welcome me and to help me. In particular, this occasion would not have occurred without the extraordinary efforts of Tom Simon, Debbie Alderson, Greg Lubring and crew, Dennis Bork, Kurt Cundiff, Rob Rector, and Ryan Connell, Don Dickey, Tom Fishback, Beth Rigger, Becky Judd, Betty Hamm, Maggie Birch, Mary Lee Stegeman, Dan O'Hearn, Mary Epping, Jessica Meetwee, and Gwendolyn Carroll. Obviously, it takes a village to swear in a judge. Thank you for today and for all that you do every day. And I also want to thank today my friend Helen Washburn for her event planning skills and her willing to organize and make things happen. And I can't tell you how grateful I am to my friends Larry Fortner for the invocation, Jim Bickle, Denise Henning, the Carrot, and Ann Covington for their kind words that have touched me deeply and for their friendship every day. Thank you. When Governor Blunt appointed me, he did not ask me to make any promises. Nevertheless, he clearly communicated the traits he believed were appropriate for a Supreme Court judge. I make a promise to all of you today that I will endeavor to serve with integrity and respect, that I will be fair and impartial, making decisions based only on the facts and the law of each case. And above all else, I will endeavor always to do the right thing. In doing so, I hope I will prove that the faith of my family, my friends, my colleagues, the Appellate Judicial Commission, Governor Blunt, and the people of Missouri is well placed. Thank you.
Judge Breckenridge is putting on the robe of office, and I ask her to please come and join us up here at the bench. Please be seated. Judge Breckenridge, we welcome you here on the bench with us and look forward to serving you with you for many years to come. Thank all of you for sharing this very special day with us. Judge Breckenridge has invited all of us to join her at a reception immediately following the ceremony at the rotunda in the Capitol across the street. Court is adjourned.